That's the second bell. All right, we are continuing our study of the book of Proverbs, and we're surveying various topics. And we've got several, probably more than we can get to tonight, but hopefully just your preparation will help you. The thing I keep coming away impressed with as I consider these Proverbs, and these are Proverbs I know I've read before, most of them, hopefully all of them, just in everyday life, just in going to work and thinking about how to answer somebody at work and, you know, how to react to certain things. These Proverbs will make us better in that regard. Hopefully will keep us from overreacting or being hasty in words. I find myself thinking about some of them more since I've been studying them more. So it just, like we said the other day, maybe we should take a month or so every now and then and just read a chapter a day and have these in the forefront of our minds, because it will help us in knowing how to live and how to act, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Now, last time we talked about, and I can't remember the topics off the top of my head. What did we talk about last time? We talked about a proverb in general, what it means and what it is and what it isn't. What were some of the topics that we talked about? Discipline. Disciplining children, right? What else? I'm sorry. Okay, drinking. The dangers of alcohol. Okay, laziness, slothfulness, how that industriousness, and how, and the really the almost an incredible part of the book really addresses that, about what happens to a person if they exhibit laziness, if they're not industrious. And it's, again, just a general observation of life and things that happen to people as they don't involve themselves and don't put themselves in terms of their effort like they should. All right. Let's begin by talking about companions and friendship. And again, I've listed several here. Hopefully you didn't limit yourself to that. I've got some on the overhead we'll talk about. What did you come up with? Characteristics of good friends and friendship. Okay, loves at all times. I've got that one. What else? Okay, there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. I've got one, faithful of the wounds of a friend. What does that mean? Faithful of the wounds of a friend. They stick by you are the wounds of a friend. In that same context, I believe, it says that, but it's in that same chapter, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. A good friend is the kind of person who will tell you the kind of things you need to hear. And one who is wise will be able to accept that. That's right. The person who is really trying to help us, the person who really tries to love us, is going to bring about those things that we really need to hear. They may not be very pleasant to hear sometimes, but if we're wise and if we'll think about them, we'll take those things and improve ourselves. So, a very eloquent way of saying, faithful are the wounds of a friend, as iron sharpens iron. What else? I've got several. Oh, I got ahead of myself. Some of what we've already talked about, loves at all times. If you walk with wise men, and you'll be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. I've always liked 25:17. Don't be a pest. Don't be at your neighbor's house too often, because he may become weary of you. I've thought about that through the years. Is that really true? That can be true. Here comes so-and-so again. What does he want now? Let's not be that way. If we're going to be good, if we're really going to be good friends and good neighbors to someone, we need to embody that. Love motivates us to conceal a matter, but repeating it can separate intimate friends. Now that kind of gets into the subject of the tongue that we'll talk about later. But you think about that. Perhaps some juicy little morsel comes along, and there's a proverb that actually talks about it that way. If we really love our friend, and we really want to really care about them, there are times when it needs to be concealed. Sometimes it's not worth repeating.
How strong, how strong friendship is, even the best friend.
But I thought about that same thing as I was putting that down. Close friends can be separated by gossip. Intimate friends, that's the New American Standard uses the term intimate there. All right, what about Any other thing you want to bring out there regarding good friends, characteristics of good friends, characteristics of good friends, of friendship? What are some of the warnings against choosing wicked companions? What if you associate with someone who is given to anger? What does the Bible say may happen to you? You may learn his ways, and that become a snare to you. Chapter 22, verse 24. It says, don't become one who is associated with one who is the guarantor of debts, because you may get caught up in that. Don't partner with those who rob. In the very first chapter, as the wise man is instructing his son, he says, you know, don't cast your lot with those who say, hey, let's go attack someone. You know, fall in your lot, we'll share the same purse. And really, we're going to attack them with violence, and we're going to hurt them. We're going to take what they have, and we're going to divide it up. He says, you're setting yourself up, or they are setting themselves up for failure and death as a result of that. He says, don't be envious of those who are companions, who are wicked companions. What else do you have? The Bible is full of warnings like that. The New Testament has warnings like that. Be careful about who you associate with. You may either learn their ways, or you may be caught up in the things that they're doing, I think is one of the big points you need to remember. And that's sometimes more of a problem with young people than it is older, but older people are not immune. Alright? Any other comment about companions and friendship?
Well, it has not become like, you know, they can something, they're a murderer or whatever.
If I read that right, this passage here, one of those passages, avoid those being guarantors of debts, because it talks about you may be caught up in that and you may not be able to repay it. So avoid people like that is what he's saying. All right, let's turn our attention now to warnings against sexual immorality. I think I got all the passages that deal with that particular subject. I may have missed one or two, but I believe surely I got the main one. How does the adulteress allure someone, entice someone? Were you able to pick out some things there in those passages that talk about the things that she uses, her methods, her appeal? What do you have?
First thing is media attire.
All right. Attire of a harlot. It talks about that. What else?
Flattering words.
Lips that drip honey. Uses her eyelids. There's more. She's forward, she's boisterous, rebellious, okay? 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 You get the same ones I have. Plus, I've got a few more. Okay? Okay? She's convincing him, hey, you got anything to worry about my husband coming home? What else? Okay? Okay. She is persistent. I didn't have that one. That's a good one. Okay? Okay, she's out at night. Okay? Okay. Yeah, she's not even worried about it. She's eating, going right along with her ways. Exactly. Very good.
Along with that, instead of having two problems with me, this is somebody that can rationalize me, they will persuade and twist the spirit, rationalize the wrong.
Okay, very good. I've got several of those. Comes out to meeting. She has appealing lips, smooth speech. She's dressed in such a way that it's obvious as to what she is. She's boisterous, rebellious. She lurks in the street. She seizes and kisses him. She's prepared her bed with aromas and expensive covering. Mentions that her husband's away. She flatters with her words, plus some of the other ones that she had. It's obvious what she's up to. All right. Okay. Very good. She doesn't care what she does to the innocent person. Okay. Excellent. She has forgotten what she's supposed to be about. She's going to this much trouble to lure someone in. What are the mistakes that the man makes? I said the initial mistakes. What leads to this?
Being put out by the reason.
Okay. All right.
Listening to her enticing speech.
All right.
And then listening to her.
Allowing himself to be sucked into it. Exactly. Going by her way. What else do you have? Okay. Exactly. Because in I think it's in chapter 2, I believe it is, where he's saying, you know, listen to the words that you've been taught. He allows his heart to turn aside to her ways. He strays into her path. He takes the way to her house, passes on the street near her corner, goes near her door, goes near her. He's setting himself up for disaster by getting himself, as Brother Lambert pointed out, by putting himself in a position to be close to her. If he would not have even gone near her, would it happen? If he had just stayed out of the way and said, "I'm not even going to go down that way because I know what's there." Okay. Okay, I agree. Paul, you have one comment too? Yeah, he got out of there. I mean, he was just in the house doing his regular work where he had to be to do his job. And as soon as that became apparent, what she was trying to do, he got out of there. Not being satisfied and rejoicing in your wife. It mentions that. Comes at night. And I've got, I looked at it, I think Sandra sort of mentioned that, you know, she said, didn't care what time of day it is, and that's true. Well, he's coming at night. I'm assuming that that means he's sort of using the cover of darkness not to be openly seen as to what he's doing. You know, I think we could apply this to a lot of things today. Right? I mean, we allow ourselves to get near sin, do it at a time, or put ourselves in a position at a time where it may not be obvious to others. That's what happens. Any other comment? I know this is a little different type of class. We're just kind of going over a topic here, and it's not quite as much of a storytelling type of thing. And I'm not as good with this type of class, I don't believe, but hopefully we're learning here. Sure.
Romans 14, there's a verse, I think, the Lord Jesus Christ, and make no provision for the flesh. And I think that goes with the comments that have already been said, that you've seen this man set himself up for this.
Yeah.
And the real way to avoid this temptation, not wait until he was in her arms to decide.
Yeah.
He should have never gone past her house.
Right.
He did make that decision at the beginning.
By the time he got into her arms and allowing her to seize him and kiss him, he had gotten to a point where it was almost impossible to turn back.
We have to look at our own lives and our own faith and say, okay, how do we set ourselves for this fall? Put ourselves in a situation where
I agree, totally. What's the results of this sin? What did you have? Now, I've limited a lot of my comments to the Proverbs, but there are certainly other relevant verses you might want to bring in, as Trevor just did. What's the result? Death. That's mentioned several times. Sinks down to death. The tracks lead to the dead, where none return. They don't reach the path of life. What else?
The physical is wasted wealth.
Okay, I've got that one. You waste your wealth. Exactly. Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What else? Okay, regret. I'll show you some of the other ones I have. I've got some of those. Whoop. I'm hitting the... In the end, it seems sweet at first, but it winds up being bitter as wormwood. That kind of goes with the idea of regret. You give your vigor to others, and there's a very beautiful way of saying, why should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. It says that you're reduced to a loaf of bread. What does that mean?
Poverty.
That's all you're going to be worth after this. Cursed of the Lord. Waste wealth, that was mentioned. You destroy yourself. You receive a reproach that will not be blotted out. And this is an interesting too. You endure the rage of a jealous husband. Because it says, he won't be satisfied even though you give him many gifts. He's not going to be happy with you for what you have done if you do this.
That could be an illusion. And that may have a reference. So he goes to talk to this woman.
I hadn't thought about that, but that very well could be. Somebody was telling me at work that they knew a man that he worked with one time. He had children with several women, and this guy was telling me this is he had a job at a grocery store when he was younger, and he knew a guy there at work with him, and he'd had children with several different ones. He got called into court, paid child support. He said, "You owe such and such a month, if I remember it right." And he said, he told the judge, "I don't make that much. So the judge says, you better get another job. I mean, that's the kind of situation people get themselves into when they get engaged in a sin. And it's a word of warning to all of us. Stay away from it. You look like you're about to have a thought.
Think about this kind of life. Terrible. In came across an article today I was reading. In fact, a father, a lady who is 2 years into conservative writer, with marriage and roles and responsibilities, and I've been reading her for years. Today she divulged, I have a church document.
And that's true, and I don't want to lose sight of that. I mean, I think we're emphasizing what the Proverbs are emphasizing regarding the consequences of this sin. We should not lose sight of the fact that there is forgiveness with God, and God is willing to take us back, and God will heal us. And we should never lose sight of that, and we should always seek to take those who have been involved in that and welcome them back. What about the fornicator in 1 Corinthians? 2 Corinthians comes around, he's repented, and he says, receive him again. And that's true of any sin. So, yeah, we don't want to lose sight of that.
The children of Israel have actually been applying the law that they want to meet the adulterers as well as their partners.
That's a good point, and Israel had not followed through God's commands in exercising punishment for those who were involved in it. If this is Solomon who's watching this, he of all people, and he's basically telling the story, I looked out through my lattice and I saw this young man being caught by an adulteress. If that's Solomon, why isn't Solomon doing something about it? He's the king of all people. So that's a good point.
6 verse 24 starts the second verse 25. Jump to that verse 24. Think of this. Keep your mother's commandment, do not forsake the law of your mother. Now that is that. Who is saying?
That's right.
Your parents are going to be alive.
Yeah, and that's obvious there. Observe the commandment of your father. Don't forsake the teaching of your mother. And we will see a little later here, I believe, some different characteristics of those who disappoint their parents. All right, anything else before we move on? All right. How about use of the tongue? The Proverbs have a lot to say about the use of the tongue. I probably didn't scratch the surface with all these different passages. What are some of the negative uses of the tongue that the Proverbs talk about? Lying, that's the first one on my list. Flattering lips, okay, I've got that one too. Sowing discord, spreading slander and strife, okay. Heard somebody else say another. Okay, I've got that one. All right, Joy.
Gossip,
okay. Okay. And what does James say about the book of about the tongue, about the power of it? Yeah, the fire that it sets is a result of just a very little member of what all it can accomplish. I think we're not doing a good job of reading some of the passages. Turn over to 26, chapter 26. I'm not doing a good job of having you read them is what I'm trying to say. It's not your fault. Actually, let's just start with, I have to read 17. It's not about the tongue, but this is one I have thought about over the few years that I... You ever seen people who are kind of have the tendency, if there's an argument going on, they're going to jump out in the middle of it? Oh, I got something to say about that. I thought about this verse in that context. I'm just going to start reading there. We'll just keep reading through the end of the chapter. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. So is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contentions quiet down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels. They go down into the innermost parts of the body. Like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross are burning lips and a wicked heart. He who hates disguises it with his lips, but he lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred covers itself with vile, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. A lot of the things that we've talked about with regard to the tongue just in the last few minutes are encompassed in that little stretch of passages there. Okay? Next chapter. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Let another praise you, and not your own mouth. A stranger, and not your own lips. Now that gets onto the subject of being a person who brags upon himself. Let somebody else do it. Somebody else will recognize that if it needs to be said. Don't boast about tomorrow. What does that remind us of? New Testament passage. Huh? Take no thought for your tomorrow, yeah. And I think the book of James talks about it as well. You know, a lot of these, I think, are self-explanatory. They don't need a lot of explanation, which kind of makes you think, okay, it does appeal to a simple-minded person. You don't have to dig too deep to get the meaning of most of these. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. You know, someone's got something to tell about somebody. They go, what do you know about so-and-so? You know, they don't go out. When a person has something to spread like that, do they go out, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? No, how is it usually done? Hey, do you hear about so-and-so? Huh?
Whispering.
Exactly. Any comments that you have? I've got others here. We've got gossip, cursing father or mother. Flatters, of course, we talked about that. Deceives and claims it was a joke. You ever known people like that? All right. How about some positive uses of the tongue? One who conceals a matter. We talked about that earlier. That's sort of not using the tongue, right? Showing restraint when it's needed. Gives reproof when it's needed. That's what we talked about a few minutes ago. As one man iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another. Sometimes reproof is needed. And if we're of the right kind of people, we'll accept that. Words spoken the right way at the right time have a powerful impact. Turn over to chapter 25. Should be just a page or so back. We'll start with verse 8. Do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor humiliates you? Argue your case with your neighbor and do not reveal the secret of another, or he who hears it will reproach you, and the evil report about you will not pass away. Like apples of gold and settings of silver, I think the old King James says in a network of silver, is a word spoken in the right circumstances. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his master. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of his gifts falsely. That gets to that idea of bragging. By forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. I think we all realize sometimes it's not so much what we say as how we say it and when we say it. When is it spoken at the right time? Or is it delivered with the right attitude? You know, we might reprove somebody, but if we're going to reprove them in such a way where we're practically being combative with them and picking a fight and making them think, well, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, maybe there is a place in that at some point. Maybe we reach a point. But sometimes that's not always necessary. Sometimes it's just saying it the right way. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And if you keep going on that chapter there, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it which crushes the spirit. And right before that, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. We've already talked about that tonight in another context. God sees all this. Verse 7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. There is so much said about the use of the tongue in the Proverbs. That's why I emphasize again, let's make an effort to read them and apply them. I know I need to do that.
God is not a proverb. In 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul said to take the things, tell others about the things that I told you about. Good thing, you know, we pass on God's word.
Okay. Very good. Okay? And that's something that could have, definitely could have been included. I have another chart as we get further back on the worthy woman, but that would definitely be fitting here, offering praise of someone who deserves it. That would be a positive use. What does it say regarding a person of few or many words? What's it generally better to be? Fewer words. And for some reason, I didn't do a chart on it, and I don't know what happened here. I don't know if I just lost track of what I was doing or not. But what did you have here in terms of passages? Okay. We will give an account for every idle word, the Bible says. Right. I mean, and like I said, I don't know. I've lost track of what I put down here. I don't know why I have, but there are numerous passages that tell us and place emphasis on the fact that let your words be few. Don't be one who is hasty to speak. Don't be one who has a lot of words. I think there's a passage that says, where there are many words, there is transgression. That's the one I'm thinking of. And I can't believe I don't know what I was doing there. I thought I had it all down. Anyway, but the idea is where there are many words, and that's something we need to think about. I need to think about that as a person who's sometimes too wordy. I think sometimes it's best just to keep quiet and not jump right in and have a lot to say.
Chapter 25, verse 7.
Yeah, words fitly spoken. And what is it? I mean, what's the image you get there? Apples of gold and a network or a setting of silver. That would be something very beautiful to look at, very pleasing to look at. Well, that's equating our words to that. All right? What do you have for characteristics of a fool? I don't know how many times the word fool is in the book of Proverbs. But it is many. And there's a many comparisons between the wise man and the fool, sometimes in the same verses. What are some of the things you thought of or some of the things you came up with?
Chapter 1, that's where it starts out of instruction.
Okay, yeah, despising instruction, not even want to hear instruction. Okay, yeah, exactly. I've got that one down as well. In fact, that's also seen in several other passages as well. Yeah, a person who's a fool doesn't want to hear instruction. Can't tell them anything. What else? Okay, in one context it says that. What does it also say? Okay, answer a fool according to his folly. And there are different contexts in which those apply. I'm sorry? I've got some passages that deal with that as well. Quick to answer, meddling, argue. But that gets to the idea of not being a person who has too much to say. You know, we need to be the kind of people that says what needs to be said when it needs to be said, but not be the kind to say too much when it's not necessary. And that's sometimes hard to know where that line is. A fool trusts his own judgment. Trusts his own judgment. He feeds on and enjoys evil, enjoys worthless pursuits. I've got that out of 15:4 and chapter 17, verse 24. He brings strife, harm to himself, harm to his companions. He proceeds into evil and pays the price. That's chapter 27 and verse 12. Wayne's already alluded to this. Brings grief and bitterness to his parents. Chapter 17, verse 25 again. He spreads slander and gossip. What else do you have? That's the ones I had.
Keeping away from strife is not for a land, but any man will fall.
Okay. Do you know people like that? It just seems like they're picking up, looking for a fight. There's people I work with. It's like here's a contentious issue that's coming up. Here's a phone ringing. They've got something to say. And it's like every where I work, we have a program office, and we have people over here on the other side, and there's a natural clashing sometimes between one group and the other, and my group's kind of caught in the middle. So we hear everybody's complaints. And there are certain people I think of, it's like everything that's presented to them, they're looking at it with this dim eye of, well, what are they up to now? What are they trying to get away with? When a lot of times they're not trying to get away with anything. It's just, but it, an attitude develops where we take a very negative, dim view and we're looking for strife, and a lot of times strife's going to be created. So as Christians and as wise people, we cannot be that way. We've got to avoid being that way. We can't let ourselves fall into that trap. Okay. That's in the Psalms. Yeah, I was about to say Ecclesiastes. I knew it wasn't Proverbs. You're right, Psalms. Okay. He didn't waste any time. Yeah, he reacts quickly. He's hot tempered. I've got that in as well.
Jim? In 26:3-12,
there's a couple seconds in a row about four. Kind of a humorous line, but then in verse 12, where it says, "Do you see a man wise and donut?" There's more hope for you. Yeah, and that kind of gets the idea of trusting your own judgment. Look right back up the verse before that. Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. Angela, did you have a comment?
Yeah, not 17:12.
Yeah, he's saying it's better to be 17:12. I don't have a lot of experience with bears, but from what I understand, when you go up into Gatlinburg, I've always wanted to see one when I'm up there. Never have. But they're up there, and they say they won't bother you unless, at least the bears in that part of the world, they won't bother you unless you're in a position where if she's got cubs that she's protecting, then they will hurt you. And that's the thing that's being talked about here. Let a man meet a bear robbed of her cubs rather than meet a fool in his folly. Think about the content of that. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. And that kind of fits in with the idea that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. If we don't acknowledge God and we don't believe in God, the Bible makes it clear that God considers us a fool. Yeah, the fool says there is no God. When there's abundant evidence for God everywhere. Okay.
Person that has the information, the ability, does not listen, and you can go on that final analysis, he's answerable. Very important to realize, answerable.
And will be held accountable.
We believe not to be that way.
Good comments. Okay. Yeah, they don't worry about sin. It doesn't even bother them. Again, that kind of goes back with the same idea of having reason to acknowledge God, but not. How about the characteristics of a wise man? I've got one who accepts reproof and instruction, accepts discipline, departs from evil, slow to respond, one who listens first and then responds, turns away from wrath, he's humble. That's a leftover from the other one. Sorry about that. That shouldn't be there. What I did, I duplicated slide and changed the bullets, and I forgot to change that one. He brings happiness to his parents, in contrast to one who is a fool. He doesn't show respect to persons. He isn't deceived by wine. And he works. Okay? He makes preparation. Let's look quickly at some of the characteristics of the worthy woman in Proverbs, the 31st chapter. I don't know why I put Job. She has her husband's trust. She's more valuable than jewels. She does her husband good and not evil. She searches for materials and works, makes things with her hands. She's compared to a merchant ship that brings food from afar. She gets up early. And again, that fits in with some of the other contexts, passages we had in Proverbs about not loving sleep. She gets up early and she provides for her household, her maidens. She makes wise investments. She considers a field and buys it. Recognizes its value. He says she's girded and equipped with strength. She makes adequate preparation for things. And if you look through those passages, you'll see every one of these. She helps the poor and the needy. It figuratively attires her with strength and dignity. She teaches wisdom and kindness with her lips, with her mouth. adequately clothes her family with fine apparel. It mentions some nice things for them. That she's fine linen, I believe it mentions. And purple, I believe it said. She happily anticipates the future. She doesn't worry about snow coming. She's prepared for it. She enhances the reputation of her husband. Her husband is known down at the gate. Thank you. But she's enhanced that reputation that he has. She's not lazy or idle, and she receives the praises of her children. I think as Sandra brought up earlier, and she fears the Lord, and she is appropriately praised for it. Now that's in a nutshell the various characteristics that we see brought out about that worthy woman. Okay. Like I say, I meant to do that, but no, I didn't. Anyway, that wouldn't make sense anyway. But I don't know why I put Job. But maybe, it probably wasn't in my mind. That's the goal we have to reach if we're women, to do these kind of things. Do you see where reading this will make you a better person? Making the effort to read it. It will make you think about it during the day. It will make you wise, exactly. That's exactly the whole point of the whole book. It will make you wise. It will equip you with knowing how to act and knowing how to be a good person. So let me encourage you again, read them. Read them. I'm planning on doing that. I have been doing that. And again, I wind up, something happened today, and I got thinking about, how should I react here? And if my memory is correct, I remember thinking about some of these principles. Hopefully I can not lose sight of that. All right, Trevor has handed out sheets for the book of Ecclesiastes. We'll have two lessons on Ecclesiastes. Then we'll finish it up with the Song of Solomon. Any other comment? I don't think the second bell's rang. But if we're done, we're done. Thank you.
That's right.
Yeah.